Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Backyard Labrish. This is your host, Margaret, and I want to welcome you on April Fool's Day. And this is no joke. I'm opening up the mic to my co-host. Hello, Donna.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Did anyone trick you today?
Yeah, I went outside and I just went flying around. Since we're talking about aviation, you know, I got on my little hot air balloon and went flying around for a little while.
Okay.
Of course. Well, you know, that's the April Fool's joke, so okay.
Oh, you got me. I can just see you hovering over. Well, I hope you enjoyed our April 1st of April music, backyard music.
Oh, yes. Always enjoy it. Definitely.
Right.
Conversation tonight.
Right. I didn't get pranked today because, I made sure that I didn't open up any of my emails that looked like it was going to prank me.
Well, they said something about the worm going around today, so hopefully people didn't get that worm on their computer.
Right. But I had a great thing happen to me today because, last month was my birth month. And, you know,
right.
Here in Georgia, you have to renew your car license on your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
So mine had expired yesterday.
Oh.
And it sort of dawned on me that I was driving around with an expired license. By one day, no joke. But then I pulled up behind a woman just as I was panicking, and her said February. And I said, well, she's way ahead of me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I proceeded to try to find an emissions place. And guess what, Donna? I was in Forsyth County. I found one. and the man played a prank on me.
Oh.
I said, I need to have my emission inspection. He said, well, that will be $50.
Wow.
And I said, what? And he said, but today we have a special for $25. So I said, okay. So I thought he said 20. I took out $20, and he said, I need five more. So I just gave it to him, you know, gladly. I figure it's a big deal between 50 and 25. And as I stood there, he, you know, wrote something up and then handed me this package. And it was all the money I'd given him. He gave it back to me.
What?
And I said, what is this, some kind of joke? And he said, yes, it's April Fool's Day, so you get it free. And he gave me all of my dollars back.
Really?
Yes. Isn't that something?
Wow.
And our listeners might know this, but this was for Side County.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I feel pretty good. So, you know, I made sure I went and gave the young man outside a little tip to buy himself a beer. But so that was he said he was playing a prank on me. Oh,
wow.
Isn't that a cool prank to pay?
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah. So I'm on cloud nine. Anyway, welcome to all our listeners.
Earlier, we might have all lined up.
Beg your pardon?
As if you had told enough people earlier, we might have all lined
up. Yeah, yes, of course. welcome to the backyard. This is Backyard Labrish, and we are here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And this is Margaret Marshall and my co-host, Donna. We're going to be talking tonight about taking to the air, or, as I would say, the history of aviation in Jamaica. And we're just having a wonderful time here as we get into the background of all sorts of things that happened in Jamaica years ago. And I don't know for the rest of our listeners, but for me, I'm just having a wonderful time discovering all this new information that I find so intriguing, because I don't remember getting much of this in school. And then after I left the island in 1959, I was so busy, you know, trying to get my handle on the American way and having my children here and raising my family, that I really never had time to really get into my culture. And now that I'm retired, it's just my passion to do research, and through the help of some wonderful historians, I am just having a ball. So tonight we're going to be discussing the history of aviation in Jamaica. And as I mentioned in the promo, you know, Donna, you might not understand what we mean by this, but I'm sure some of our listeners will. In Jamaica, in our dialect, we say we little but we talawa. And I am assuming that talawa was an African word, or from the African language, or it could be a mixture of Spanish and, you know, African language, because a lot of that is part of our patois. But it means big. You know, we're little, but we're huge.
Oh, okay.
So it's talawa. We're little, but we're talawa. Because
talawa.
For an island of that size, you know, we've been making history from way back. As we have gone over on some of our shows, you know, with the people coming here to America from 18-something, and now I have found out that we even had a famous American who landed an aircraft there. And when you think of it as being such a small island in those days, that was a big deal. I don't know if the Jamaicans at the time considered him such a big deal, because I know when I was growing up, we tended, I don't know if it's because we were under the British rule and we had the British type of culture, that we were never, you know, like jumping up and down and carrying on about someone that was famous. We would be very demure and dignified, and I would say reserved about our compliments. You know, we were not as as exuberant as most Americans were, I remember, like about your movie stars and your singers and all of that. You know, we don't go overboard, or we never used to. When I was growing up, it was not considered the thing to do. It would not be proper then. So it would be interesting to know what kind of welcome he had, you know, if it was really rah-rah, whatever. But I want to start off by letting our listeners know that might have not gotten an email about the promo or might not be aware of this. But, you know, just 8 years after the Wright brothers took off in their plane here, he was an American, but he was living in Jamaica and took off in a plane there. And it was quite an event because it was held in Kingston, which is the capital of Jamaica. It hasn't always been, but it is now. And the news article, and incidentally for our listeners, I am getting some of this history from Pieces of the Past, which is part of the Daily Gleaner, and they have a website that you can really go to and see a lot of things, a lot of articles that have been researched and placed there on Pieces of the Past. But it says the first plane to fly in Jamaican skies was flown by Jesse Sigman, an American aviator, on December 21st, 1911, only 8 years after the Wright brothers made history with the first plane flight the world had ever seen. You know, and thinking of how small the island is, Donna, I'm sure you can relate to that.
Yeah.
You know,
I can imagine how that must have been for, I mean, you know, seeing, you know, the first plane to come in. I just really can't even imagine, you know, what that's like. But I can say one thing that, and I know you're going to get to it, but there's a photo of this guy that's on the side, and, boy, he looks rather dapper there. I mean, he looks really kind of, you know, sharp with his nice leather jacket on.
Right. Well, actually, the first flight that took off was not a flight that came in, but, you know, just like the Wright brothers, try to get this machine that they had made to fly,
uh-huh,
you know, just take off, was the same thing that happened there. But 1,000 people from all over Jamaica gathered at Knutsford Park, which most Jamaicans will know, race course. It's a big park that, you know, went on to be used for several things. But at 3 p.m. on that particular date, that part of the island is now, I'm sorry, that part of Kingston is now New Kingston, it's called, to see this thrilling aerial exhibition. Now, after a 45-minute delay, which I thought was funny because, you know, in Jamaica, most things are delayed. You know what I mean? But after, even in 1911... with an American at the helm, it was the same thing, you know. We don't rush for anything on the island. But anyway, after a 45-minute delay, due to unfavorable 20-mile-an-hour wind and slight rain, 22-year-old Sigman, who had only been flying for 4 months,
oh my goodness,
managed to take off in his a monoplane, they call it, determined not to disappoint the spectators. Men holding on to the plane's framework for brace, let go, you know, just like they did it when the Wright brothers took off. You know, you didn't see that. They ran with it and then let go, and the big bird-like construction of, listen to this, wood, steel, wire, and silk ran down the ground eastward to increasing speed. After covering some 60 yards, it mounted in the air, reaching an altitude of 200 feet. The cheer from the crowd was so loud, it almost drowned out the sound of the plane's engine. And he flew northward and then westward at a mile-a-minute pace, occasionally staying beyond the race course, straying beyond the race course boundaries. So, you know, that was quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
It's something else.
1 mile a minute. Now, I mean, you got to see everything.
Right, right, right. And that was only 8 years after the Wright brothers had built their thing here in America.
Wow.
So, anyway, and he did it the following day, too. You know, it was ready to fly again the next day to the thrill of an entirely new crowd because, you can imagine, that was quite something.
Yeah, wow.
And a week later, he left Jamaica to fly across the Isthmus of Panama, following the course of the Panama Canal. So, you know, that came actually from Joyous Jam's website.
Oh,
Pieces
yeah.
Of the Past had that. So she's the one, again, who did that research to put that piece together.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's
now, not long afterwards, in World War One began, and many young Jamaican men left Jamaica to see the foreign lands and fight for the king of their country. At that time, it was a king. Some joined the Royal Flying Corps, which was later called the RAF. Now, only a few managed to become pilots. Most worked as mechanics, navigators, and bombers. Now, one of the most famous Jamaican pilots was William Robinson Clark, and that's the one you saw the picture of.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the one who saw active duty in World War One. Now, I didn't even know that we had men that took off for World War One. Now, I knew about World War Two, and a lot of people in my age group can relate to that because a lot of us have relatives that left for that war.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them went to London and never came back.
Uh-huh.
You know, because my uncle, my mother's youngest brother, was one of them.
Oh. Okay.
So I thought, you know, I could really relate to that. But I didn't know that we had, not only did we have men that left at that time, but we also had some of those who became pilots. So
uh-huh.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, it's. I'm telling you, just going back to that other guy, Seligman. When you think about him only having flown for 4 months, I mean,
yeah.
I'm like, he had only flown for 4 months, and I mean, he's already given a show and getting ready to fly across the Panama Canal or whatever. I'm like, wow.
Right, but you know, Donna, in all of these things, when as we read about these people of the past,
uh-huh.
The common link. Is the passion they had for whatever they were doing.
Right.
It's interesting. You know, it's like it was the driving force in their success. You know, that's how come, and if we can relate it to now, that's what brings success, you know, having a passion for whatever you do.
Right,
so it
right.
really, you know, to me, just gives me a lot of inspiration, and I hope that our listeners and even those live online now, I see we have a couple of listeners listening online. I want to welcome you to the backyard. We're always here lavishing about something, and today we're lavishing about Jamaica's aviation history. So I thank you for joining us and hope you will join us. If you want to call us and interact, please call 770-495. I'm sorry. No. Donna, would you give the number for me? I'm giving the wrong number.
718-766-4558. That's 718-766-4558.
Okay. And all of our shows are archived and on our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com. So back to what I was saying. So we had the guys taking off for World War One, and this one famous pilot, actually, this was he got shot down over France because that France was in Germany's hand at that time. And this was 1917, Donna. You know, that is. Yeah, he was wounded, but he came back to Jamaica. and he lived to a ripe old age and was always happy to show off his scars that decorated his stomach to anyone who doubted his remarkable story.
Mm.
I found that very interesting. Now, here again, I wanted to tell our listeners that our objective behind the Backyard Labrish, both our radio show and our website, is to have, instead of people writing about us, wouldn't it be nice to have this pilot writing about himself or to read some of his own thoughts or his own words, Donna? You know, he lived to a ripe old age, but there's nothing here that he told about himself.
That's a very good point to make. And, I mean, who better can tell your story than you? I mean, certain people that are listening in, there's accomplishments that they've made, that, you know, obstacles that they've overcome that, you know, can inspire someone else. It's not necessarily for you. I mean, although it's helped you to get wherever you are, it can also bring inspiration to others to know that they too can, you know, get over those obstacles or to be passionate about something and accomplish it, you know, be it whatever it may be, but telling your own story. We have people that are authors, and you really don't even know the story behind that author that propelled them to the point of being able to, you know, sit down and get the energy and the strength to write that book or the guidance that was needed to write that book. And so what better person to tell that story than you? And, I mean, going to the backyardlabrish.com and leaving your profile, leaving information, and then contacting Ms. Margaret and letting her know that you would just like to, you know, leave your footprint would be something that I know that you would definitely not regret and others would definitely appreciate.
All right. Thank you, Donna. Now, it said here that when most of the pilots from World War One returned home, many of them gave up flying as there were no national airlines or air wing with which to work. Flying did not continue, though a member of the legislature tried to, you know, get something going, but they had some people that were doing, had private planes, and they were doing stunts, as they call them, loops, and all over the island, not all over the island, but particularly in Kingston, because this is Dr. Joy Lumsden again, you know, researching this, and she's quoted from some other article that she got someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, after that period, there were people would see planes being flown, you know, around at this particular place, which we call race course.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually a flying club was started in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, in Kingston. Anyway, what I thought was funny, and I didn't even know that, it wasn't really funny, but interesting, is that about the Airbus, you know, I mean, that landed in the water. A flying boat is what it was.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have an airport at the time, but it is, they say here, flying boat service was discontinued in 1944, but it started in 1930.
Oh, okay.
It's even earlier than that. I think 1927 brought the inaugural Pan American Clipper to Jamaica. It was a four-engine special plane that Charles Lindbergh, landed smoothly in the Kingston Harbor. Isn't that something?
Yes.
You know, Charles Lindbergh was a famous person.
Right, right.
Here in the United States. And we didn't have an airport, but it was a machine that could land in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yeah.
When I read that, I said, gosh, I didn't know that. I really didn't. They even had service between Kingston and Cuba. You know, Cuba is only 90 miles away from Jamaica.
Wow. You know, because it's like 90 miles from Key West as well.
Right, right, yeah. So in the old days, you know, there was a lot of travel between Jamaica and a lot of the Caribbean islands, but particularly Cuba. But the only difference is that, you know, you could get to Cuba faster than to any other island.
Oh,
because
okay.
It was so close. And I think that just like Sarah Palin said, there are certain parts of Jamaica that you can, I think, actually see the tip of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about that. You know, we can see it. So remember when she talked about that. However, I thought it was very interesting that all of that was going on while I was growing up. And I suppose I was not really paying attention. I don't know if there were a lot of other young people who might have been involved with that. You know, perhaps they had people who were interested in aviation or were pilots or something. But I know that I had no idea all of that was going on. I must have been pretty young. I was born in 35, but some of this started in 1931.
Mm.
But, you know, there was a lot of activity going on there at that time.
Yeah.
Now, the actual flying boat service was discontinued in 1944 when Pan American started a land plane service into Palisades facilities. That was previously known as the Royal Navy Air Station, and it was built by the British in 1940, which is now one of our international airports. You know, it's the same location.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just interesting to see the progression, you know, along the way. You know, it was a naval place run by the British at first.
Mm-hmm.
Before it became a commercial landing place for commercial airline.
Oh.
Now, from the late 1940s, Palisades, which it was called then, was kept busy due to the arrival and departure of many non-scheduled charter cargo flights flying freight out of Miami to South America, which stopped in Jamaica to refuel. You know, in those days, the planes couldn't go far without refueling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, boy, things have changed.
Well, when you think of that, I think about the fact that, you know, I know that people probably still do it, but, I mean, people don't run as much as they used to see airplanes take off or, you know.
Oh, well, I was coming to that. Because when I was growing up as a child, that was a big treat. You know, on Sunday evenings, RJR, remember we did the radio station thing at one time.
Right, right.
And they would have a special show. I remember it was called, I don't remember the name of the show, but it was like Cruising Down the River. There was a song, Cruising Down the River, on a Sunday afternoon. And the show would start with that song.
Uh-huh.
And it would be like love songs that would be played during that hour.
Oh, my.
and I can remember that was the hour that we'd usually be in the car going to the airport.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
To watch the planes take off. And
be
land. Yeah. So we were listening to Air Jamaica.
Oh, wow.
Playing Cruising Down the River on a Sunday afternoon. And, you know, as I read that, it brought back a lot of very pleasant memories for me because, you know, something you look forward to.
Right.
And another thing that we did, which will be another segment, is we would ride on what we call the Avenue Tram because it would just go around in a circle, similar to 285 does here.
Uh-huh.
But it would be a tram car.
Okay.
And we would call it just a tram. You know, we're taking the tram. That's what we would say.
And it would do what now? It would go around Jamaica or what?
No. Just Kingston, a certain part of Kingston, not Jamaica.
Okay, just so it was kind of like around a particular route in a circle.
Right, 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 right. So you would just go on a tram just to ride around and come back to where you started. And that was a big thing. those simple days were so beautiful. And we didn't feel deprived at all. As a matter of fact, I think I felt very privileged. But that's another show. Because we, I have access to some beautiful pictures and some history, actually, about that. So, we have so much rich history that we actually participated in during that period. But, you were almost unaware of it. It's now history. But during the time when you're living it, you don't pay too much attention. You really don't. Of course, let's say I didn't. I must confess. Perhaps there were some people who were more in the moment than I was. But I know that, it didn't seem like anything to me. But looking back now,
You know what, it was kind of like what we were during my time, being in the 60s. That was kind of how it was for us to sit and watch the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
When the space shuttle was going off, it was like, oh, my goodness, everybody get together, and you got to sit around the TV so you could watch that event,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was something else. Anyway, it says here that the decade of the 1940s also brought with it a second wave of trained pilots. Again, Army volunteers returned home after serving in the RAF. Now, that is the one I know about. Because that was the, World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember my uncle going away in the perhaps 1940. That's our late 30s is what I can remember very vividly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him in his RAF uniform. It was just so vivid in my mind. And I never ever saw him again because he went to London and never came back.
Wow.
So, but several of the men who left then to go and join the Royal Air Force, they came back to Jamaica,
uh-huh.
And there were a lot more pilots then.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, they have a figure here, 3,624 joined the RAF ground staff, and another 250 were in different, different disciplines, I suppose. But a lot of them came back as pilots, and that is when we got what is called an air squadron, and that was in 1941. They raised enough money to buy 12 bombers to contribute to the war efforts. People were here in Jamaica raising money to do all of that. Soon the warplanes began to be used for civilian travel. Air traffic increased and flying began to become more common. Now, by 1950, 80% of tourist visitors arrived by air.
Oh.
So it was not until then that we had a lot of, tourism. Well, at least they came by air.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember in the early history that we talked about how long the ships would take to go from, like, Jamaica to here for the men who came up to college and things like that, or
right.
went to England. And knowing how it would seem crude now to us, understand as we have now, in terms of even traveling by boat,
yeah.
a ship. You can imagine what it was in the times when the men that came up here to college that we spoke about in 1889 and things. You can imagine how tedious that trip would have been.
Yeah.
And I am just imagining now the kind of aircraft and how perhaps, the air flight might have been when they just started to fly.
Right.
Can you
just
imagine?
I'm sure it wasn't, like one of the luxury liners with the nice plush cushion seats.
Right. Not only that, I don't think perhaps the technology was such that the flight might have been smooth.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? It could have been very rocky.
Right, right.
I mean, the takeoff and landing and things like that. So I just picture
that is very interesting because, you know, I have seen at, like, the Air Force where they have the aerial shows and they'll have some of the old planes sitting there, but those are, like, more or less like maybe bomber planes where there's like two-seaters. Those aren't passenger planes, and I've never really seen a passenger plane from that era. You know, you see pictures of the outside of it, but you never really get the feel of, well, I wonder what it looked like on the inside. Because when you even the pictures that they show on the site are pretty much like little, you know, one, two-seater type things other than that one that Charles Lindbergh, you know, flew, which was more like a, you know, the Airbus type of thing that, you know, that, or airboat or whatever it was that kind of landed in the water. But outside of that, you really don't get a feel for what did the inside look like. They never really show that.
Well, I came, my first flight was in 1959, when I flew from Jamaica to United States. But we stopped, same thing, we stopped on an island, I can't remember what it was, for refueling and, of course, letting off passengers. And it was BWIA, British West Indies Airways.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know if they're still running on the island, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
But I remember it being, you know, no way like the planes that Air Jamaica has now. And I remember it very, very clearly.
Uh-huh.
It was quite bumpy. And you can imagine flying for the first time.
Right.
Well, I flew around a lot while I was here, you know, because I was quite active. And then when I went back to Jamaica in 1970, I would fly from Kingston to Montego Bay, and that is when they would have, like, a plane that carries perhaps 10 people in a small aircraft. Smaller planes are not as smooth.
Now, when you flew, the first time you flew out, how many people did that one seat? Do you know?
You know, I don't remember, but I know it wasn't like 100. It perhaps was, I would say 40, 30, 40. I don't remember. It wasn't a big plane. I remember. It was a BWIA.
Yeah.
And it stopped in, I can't remember what island it was. But
Did y'all have the attendant and the seat belts and all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had that. We had that. I don't think once they were flying commercial flights, I don't think they, you know, I think they had to have that from that time.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that, you know, I'm sure the instruments and all of that. But it would be interesting to talk to someone who flew planes in those days.
Right.
And know what the technology is like now that can make the comparison.
Right.
It would really be interesting. And I was hoping that our favorite our fan from New York would be on the call tonight. I see he's not here. He's busy with something. But anyhow, you know, he was in the Air Force here.
Oh, okay.
In the States.
Right.
So it would be interesting for him to perhaps fill us in on his observation of back in the days and now.
Right, right.
So,
we'll have to ask him about that next week.
Right, right, right. But in this article that is on Pieces of the Past, they have a lot of information about a lot of names that we're very familiar with, and I'm sure some of our listeners perhaps know some of these people that went on to, you know, they had a flying club, I mean, from early. You know, 1926,
uh-huh.
A pilot balloon station and a club is said to have been formed in 1926. It was called the Manchester Gliding Club, and another one, a club was established in 1931. And here again is Dr. Joy Lumsden that has researched and put all these things together. So the first time a Jamaican flew was said to have been in the early 1930s when three Jamaicans tried to build and fly their own plane in Montego Bay. It took 2 years to build the aircraft. That, remember the first one that was flown there was by an American. Remember the one in 19... Right. So this was in 1930 when three Jamaicans built their own plane.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, talk about dreamers, you know? This is what is really intriguing me about my country people.
Yeah.
It took 2 years to build the aircraft that would be christened... what did they christen? Miss Jamaica in 1932.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's funny.
Pops McGee and his friends, Suarez, and Dudley Webster are the ones who built it. And they ordered a kit from America. Isn't that something? Its maiden flight in Montego Bay was disappointing as there was not enough power to lift it off. So Miss Jamaica was taken to Kingston and displayed at the Kingston Racecourse, raising 600 pounds from curious onlookers. Hundreds of onlookers followed the aircraft to a particular part of the island where it was to have its second trial. Pops McGee climbs into the cockpit, and the plane actually takes flight, but only for an instant, as after a short, steep climb, the propeller disintegrated,
Pops
had to be pulled from the crumbled body of the plane.
Oh, my goodness.
Over 30 years later, Pops became a qualified pilot, never having given up his dream to fly. That is the good part of the story. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. That's good, though. Hey, but at least he didn't give up.
Right. This is what I mean. So it took him 30 years, but he accomplished his dream.
That's right.
Because his dream was to fly. Now, it didn't say, you remember now, he made his own plane. He and two of his buddies made his own plane from a kit. Can you imagine that grown men would do something like that and try to go up to fly it, knowing that they could be killed?
Well,
isn't that something?
Yeah.
I thought that was just such a inspiring story for me.
You know, they do that. You know, you got to figure they do the same thing with cars. They build them from kits. And so I don't think that they really thought about it that way. I think they just thought, okay, we're going to order this kit and get the flying here. And I mean, but I find it interesting that what I found interesting was that they could actually order a kit. Not that they ordered the kit, but that there was actually a kit available, and at that time, the 1930s, that they could actually order to put it together. I mean, that's interesting within itself.
Right. You know,
but it also talks about their passion. You know, I mean, he was so passionate. His passion and his dream was so much bigger than whatever was going on. That wasn't even an issue for him.
Right. And after 30, they didn't speak, I didn't see anything about Suarez and Webster, just about Pops McGee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says a few years later, in 1935, one Mr. Gray made his attempt to fly. His path involved a grassless area near Paddington Terrace, and the Kingstonians will know where that is. He also didn't get very far, as the plane crashed in some nearby trees. So the first Jamaican to own and fly an airplane to Jamaica was Mr. Horn, H-O-R-N-E, Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y, Horn. He purchased a three-place, P-L-A-C-E, F-2, Waco, and landed at Harbor Head in 1936. It wasn't until 1950, however, that private flying peaked. So in 1936, that's 1 year after I was born, this man bought his own plane and flew it. He said he purchased a three-piece and flew it and landed at Harbor Head. I think that Harbor Head is in Kingston, too. You know, the island, for the listeners who don't know, you know, it's very mountainous. We have a lot, the inland of Jamaica. And even there are some areas where we have mountains near to the seacoast. And, of course, you have just magnificent views from certain peaks in Jamaica. But in order to have enough space, I think, you know, to do their practice and landing, I think Kingston lended itself very well to that. So most of them would either be in Kingston or would go to Kingston to do this. But, I mean, these guys were something else. So the private flying peaked in the 50s. The flying club was formed in 1951, and by 1953 had amassed 9 planes and some 70 members. This was no mean feat, considering that in 1952 only 6 planes were registered on the island. The planes were owned both individually and collectively by members, which included aerial photographers. Some people can relate to some of these names. You know, Tony Kelly was chairman of the Civil Aviation Authority, and Carl Bennett, those are names that we know very well, who founded Wings Jamaica. And his wife also flew. And they went on to train generations of Jamaican pilots. So it would be interesting to know if that family is still involved in, you know, in things in Jamaica. It doesn't say here. But I want to welcome listeners to the Backyard and also our listeners online. You're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're here each week at 8 o'clock, hanging out in the backyard, enjoying, remembering back in the days in Jamaica when we grow up, and things that happened then and before our times that we were perhaps not very familiar with, but we perhaps can find very interesting now. I know I'm having a wonderful time just discovering all this information now that I have time to do the research, and I'm hoping that some of this information will be inspiring to young Jamaicans as well as Jamaicans in my age group who might just be curious and like to know. And for the young people who have goals and have a passion to do something special, I just want to encourage them and let them know that a lot of people before them, a lot of native people, a lot of Jamaicans before them did some pretty cool things and are still doing some pretty cool things, because I'm going to talk about a special one later on. But I just wanted to go into a little bit more about, you know, the aviation history, because most people now just know that we have, you know, our national airline is Air Jamaica, and it's been flying for quite some time now. But a lot of people, I'm sure, didn't know or perhaps don't even think about how did we get started as a country, you know, how did this come about? So I hope that my listeners find it interesting. And if you do, please let us know. So Donna, are you with me still?
Oh, yes, I'm still here. Definitely.
Right. Okay, so now now there was another plane that was successfully flown. Remember, now the first two were sort of not very successful for one reason or another.
Right.
But in 1970, the first successful flight of a Jamaican-built plane, we're talking about planes built here now, we've had pilots before this, you know.
Right.
It was affectionately known as Miss Pitts. And this occurred in 1970. They don't tell us why these names.
I know. But I was wondering, you know, they're both women, you know.
Right.
Hey, maybe it's kind of like how we do it here when you name your car. They're always named after a woman.
Right. And, you know, Jamaican men love their women. Anyway, Miss Pitts. It occurred in 1970, and it was led by John Harrison and Mike Vison. The plane was conceptualized and built in living rooms and is still flying in New York in the care of the Harrison's son. This same team built another plane, which flew successfully in 1980. We're talking about these guys building their own plane. I just think that is so awesome. Don't you?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, again, this is a little bit different. At least they didn't get the kit this time. So that means...
No, by this time, you know, 1970, I don't think necessarily it was from a kit, but they perhaps knew what they were doing and ordered the right parts, you know what I mean?
Right. Or maybe have gone to, you know, to school by now for that. I mean, it was 1970, so.
Oh, yes. You know, and we're known, you know, for a lot of pilots. As a matter of fact, one of them is our person of the week, and I'm going to read a little bit about him. But remember some time ago, Donna, when we had the first, the Jamaican who did the dog race, the 1,000-mile dog race?
Oh, you're talking about...
And he was quite young, too.
Uh-huh.
Here again, we have another young Jamaican. He happens to live in Florida, and hopefully we'll get him on the show one day. But he's Barrington Irvin. He's only 23.
Uh-huh.
And in 1970, he was the youngest and the first black man to fly around the world. And I thought that was quite an accomplishment.
Wait a minute, you said 1970.
I'm sorry about that. In 2007.
Yeah, 2007.
2007 was the year that was done.
Now, this is that he set two world records by being the first person of African descent and the youngest person ever to fly solo around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
His parents, Reverend Barrington Irving, and his mother, Clover, brothers Christopher and Ricardo Irving were there to greet him. And he arrived in Opa-locka Airport in Miami with hundreds of people cheering him on.
Mm-hmm. And he does have a website. And what he's doing now is encouraging, especially young black men, that their dreams are possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's living proof. You know, the important thing for the young folks that we all, as adults, just need to be conscious of always doing is encouraging them that their dreams are possible.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's really needed just goes along with what you said. He says, they told me I was too young. They told me I didn't have enough money and that I couldn't do this, that I don't have the wisdom, that I don't have the strength or the experience. They told me I would never come back home. And they said in an emotional and touching speech, he says, guess what? All those people who tried to put me down, it's done. And now what?
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I am so proud of him. So I want to, along with the rest of the diaspora, celebrate him today and let the world know how much we appreciate his drive, his passion, and his example. Because I think he's a marvelous example for young men all over the world. And we are very proud that he happens to be a Jamaican, another Jamaican taking the step, you know, of doing something that seems impossible.
Yeah. It's really neat. Something when you really break it down, I mean, he clocked more than 130 hours of flight time on a 97-day 26,800-mile journey, and it stopped in Azores, Spain, Greece, Egypt, Dubai, India, Thailand, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Japan. And that, you know, is really something when you think about, you know, that here he was all by himself and he, you know, did this across the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, just he said that his heroes were the Tuskegee Airmen, which, you know, a lot of people may not know about, but they were
African-American airmen that learned how to fly at Tuskegee University, and that his mentors were Eric Lindbergh and Steve Fawcett and Dick Rutan, who supported his efforts. So that's really, you know, really something. And he said that, you know, the fight was to inspire inner city and minority youth to consider pursuing careers in aviation and aerospace. And it said that there were times during the flight that he became mentally and physically, you know, tired, but it was worth it. And so, and they said, and if nothing else, one thing that was kind of positive was that he lost 15 pounds, and now he needs a haircut, he says.
Oh, my goodness. But you can imagine, you know, being alone in a plane, you know, going, especially when everybody's telling you you're not coming back, and that is impossible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can imagine what goes through his mind as he's by himself traveling, I'm sure, in all sorts of weather, and landing in all these places. Now, remember, all those countries that you talk about, you know, they all speak different languages.
Yeah.
You know, if you think of it really in detail, this is quite a feat for a young man. You know, they say that most men or boys don't really mature till they're 25. He was 23.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wasn't even at the age of maturity, as they would call it. So, you know, it really makes it reiterates the fact that anyone at any age that have a passion to do something and the drive, and as long as you have the strength, and you go for it, it is very attainable. That's what that tells me. And so, again, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. The whole idea of Backyard Labrish is it was designed to celebrate and really research Jamaica's culture. We are so diversified. And although, like the rest of the world, there's a lot of negative things that are happening there now, there's also a lot of positive things that might not be in the news and people might not know about. And what we try to do on this program is to just talk. This is not a platform where we try to, you know, do right and wrong and politics or anything like that. We're just reminiscing about the good times and the good things that are happening not only in our country and our culture, but, you know, all over, because Jamaicans are scattered all over the world. There's hardly a place you won't find them. And it's interesting because they're usually in the forefront. They're not afraid to be the first.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's pretty interesting about this was that he was 15 years younger than the previous record holder. I mean, that's something, you know. I mean, so that means that the previous record holder was about 38, you know, years of age. And that one of the things that he said that, was that he met this guy, Captain Gary Robinson, that in his parents' bookstore. But he felt that when he found out that, you know, Mr. Robinson was, you know, a captain over an airplane, he felt that he wasn't smart enough initially to even fly a plane. So it almost seemed like rocket science to him. It was just somewhere out in space, and he would have never thought that a decade later that he would actually be, you know, flying this airplane. But he said that one of the things that it really made a difference was that someone genuinely cared about him and wanted to help him, especially someone that was not even his family. And he said that's what Captain Robinson did. He was his inspiration, and that's how he got into aviation, just because someone took the time out for him. And one of the things that he started doing was he felt that he had to, you know, go and speak out. And he began to speak in churches and schools and to community groups and, you know, all over how you know, with the courage, you have to have courage to chase your dreams and that you can actually reach them. So really he's talking about exactly what you're saying, you know, that he has what's called a, you know, he's living this philosophy, and that, you know, you have to do mentorship, and so one of the things that he's doing is, you know, he's working with inner city or high minority youth, educating them about the opportunities that exist to have a satisfying career with a high pay in aviation. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's really neat to see that, you know, it's someone, of course, went out and touched his life, and now he's turning around and says he wants to be a blessing and turn around and do the same thing and do, you know, Irving's mentorship is what he's calling it, and to, you know, mentor other students and also, you know, but it, yeah, it was, I thought that was pretty, you know, pretty neat, you know, that, you know, he's, you know, talking about coming from the inner city and how he began and, you know, and just how once that person, somebody has a belief in you and they tell you that you can do it and how you begin to move in that direction, how everything just unfolds because, you know, he didn't have a plane, he didn't have money, you know, and everything just began to unfold for him. And so that's really neat. And what the best part is that he gained the experience. He's young and he's gained experience from that, and the fact of what happened is not lost on him, even though he's young.
And that's so true, because, you know, a lot of young people are not seriously thinking, or if they even have a dream, they keep putting it off, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Right.
And figure, well, you know, they'll do it later. But, you know, he started young. He got the idea, he got the encouragement, and he got the passion.
And, you know, the thing about it is that being young also is he will be able to reach a lot of people that are young men or young children that,
yes.
You know, that older people. But let me tell you what's really interesting is that the article that I was reading, it was actually featured in an Indian magazine called the Mobile International Festival, Your Passport to Adventure News. And they have a lot of, you know, international information, but it's an Indian newspaper that he was featured in. But it just kind of shows you, yeah, that he, you know, made a impression, you know, even in India. So.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, they talk about Mahatma Gandhi and, you know, just different people. But it's way down in the article, but it's right there, a whole huge article on him.
Wow, that is so interesting. But I want to tell our listeners again that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're here each week at 8, and we only have a couple of minutes left. We're celebrating Mr. Barrington Irving, who is the youngest Jamaican-born man to fly solo around the world. And Donna, tell us all the countries that he stopped again.
Oh, okay. I'd have to go back and get that for you.
Sorry about that. But he went all over the world, and he landed in different, of course, he had to land, too. But the thing about it is that he did it solo, you know, by himself.
Yeah.
And he was only 23, and I find that very impressive, especially.
I can tell you now, it was Azores, Spain, Greece, Egypt, Dubai, India, Thailand, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Japan, and of course, he landed back in Miami, but it was a 97-day, 26,800-mile trip that he did in 130 hours of flight time.
So there again, we have another Jamaican
continent.
First.
Four continents. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. So I hope that you have all enjoyed our little talk about our aviation history. And I'm hoping that our listeners online will start calling in and joining the Labrish. We'd love to hear from you and for you to share some of your stories with us. It's good to listen online, but it's also good to call in and interact with us so that it can really be a labrish. And Donna, you have been such a strong, riveting post for me for this platform. I really want to let the listeners know how much I appreciate you. And Donna just has a love for culture, and especially the Jamaican culture, I guess. And she has been my co-host, my loyal co-host, who helps me to do my research and get as excited about learning about the past like I do. Because, I get really like a little girl when I discover something new. Because, of course, being here, I know a lot about Charles Lindbergh and, those people. But I didn't know that he landed a plane in our harbor in Kingston. So when I saw that, Donna, I was just saying, how cool is this, in 1931, when I was just a little baby. I don't know if my mother even knew about it or cared. But
yeah.
I find all of this history just very, very inspiring. So I'm hoping that my listeners will enjoy too. And for those of you who might listen at a later date, there are several shows archived, and you can just pick your favorites and just listen to them while you're watching, while you're doing your computer work. You just can make it small and let it be in the background, because there's no place as comfy as the backyard. For those of you who might have grown up in Jamaica, you know what pulling up a chair underneath a mango tree or a nesberry tree, or just out in the garden and having the trade winds blow right across the island, how sweet it is. And you get together with a couple of your peers, your girlfriends or whoever, boyfriends, collection of friends, and just lavish about what turns you on. So that's what we do here each week, and we really hope you enjoy it. So we thank you for tuning in and for listening to us. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to be saying good night, and we will see you next week. So, Donna, do you have any parting words on April Fool's Day?
Well, I just hope everyone's had a great, listen in as we labrished about the aviation history in Jamaica, and that they will go to backyardlabrish.com and just leave a little footprint there and leave some comments for us. And, of course, if they have some information that they would like to share online, get in touch with Ms. Margaret and let her know, and she can schedule you as a speaker. But outside of that, I just hope everyone's had a wonderful day and look forward to labrishing again next week on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, before I go, Donna, I wanted to tell you that I got an invitation from a young lady who has a website. It's JamaicanDiaspora.com, and we are collaborating on starting a book club of Jamaican authors. And she has suggested that we start off with Lover's Leap. Now, Donna, I never even knew about this before she talked to me about it, but there's a legend in Jamaica about some slaves that were in love, and I won't give away all of the book, and they were forced, the slave master of the female in the book was not wanting her to be in love with whoever she was in love with, and he was trying to separate them. And there is a place in Jamaica that has the most gorgeous view of the ocean, and legend has it that both of them leaped there. And they would prefer to die together than be separated, because they were on the same plantation and the master was trying to separate them. So the author who lived in that district where this legend supposedly happened, wrote a book about, you know, his knowledge of what I suppose a little of it is hearsay as well as his own imagination. So the book is Lover's Leap, and I think we got disrupted someplace because there's something going on here, but we will announce the book club on our website, and next week we will talk some more about it. I think we're having some technical difficulties. Can you hear me, Donna?
Yes, I can hear you fine now.
Oh, I got cut off for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So, and our time is almost up. So I can just encourage everyone. I'll have some information about the book Lover's Leap on the website, and we will talk more about it next week.
All right.
So good night, and thank you all for listening. And Donna, thanks for being here, and I'll see you next week.
All righty. Good night.
Bye-bye.